Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay.
All right, welcome to a special edition of the SoxProspects.com podcast. My name is Chris Hatfield. With me today are two members of the staff. What's your title again, Mioli?
Columnist.
Columnist. So, staff columnist John Mioli rejoins us from a stellar debut about a month ago. And joining us for his maiden voyage into the world of the SoxProspects.com podcast is Matthew Hegel. I always pronounce his name wrong. It's Hegel.
And it's
Hegel. Yeah, and he's our staff editor and staff writer. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
We're trying to throw this together really quick to get you some reaction on the draft signing deadline, which was yesterday. The Red Sox signed nearly all of their early picks. In fact, they signed all four of their first rounders. They signed everyone they drafted up through round 7. The only player in the top 10 rounds they didn't sign was Senquez Galson of Mississippi, who's going to Ole Miss to play both baseball and football. Matter of fact, he's arguably more a better football prospect than a baseball prospect, but we'll get to him in a minute. A few other guys signed as well. We'll just go through them one by one, I guess. Just to get some scouting info, see what these guys think of them, where they might start, because that's a question we're getting from you guys a lot. When are we going to see these guys? Where are they going to be? With one guy in particular, I know that the Greenville Drive fan base is eager to have out in South Carolina, or back in South Carolina, in his case. We'll get to him in a minute. But let's start with the number one selection of the team, guys. Matt Barnes signed at the 11th hour, like a bunch of these guys did. Matter of fact, I think all the first-round guys signed within the last 15 minutes before the deadline. Matt Barnes, a right-hander out of Connecticut. He was the 19th overall selection. He signed for $1.5 million. Yes, I have my finger to my mouth like Dr. Evil as I say that. But Mioli, you, I believe, went down to UConn and talked to Barnes. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. I did that over Easter weekend, and they had a doubleheader against Georgetown at the New Britain Rockettes Stadium. I missed the game that he threw, but I talked to him and his teammate George Springer. And
Springer signing with the Astros, by the way, we should mention.
Yes.
But continue.
$2.5 million, I believe. So that was I was a distant third in the income on that one. But but yeah, Barnes is a guy who, the only time I actually saw him pitch was that game against South Carolina, where he kind of lost his command towards the beginning, but you could tell in that game that when he has it, he has it. And his fastball was working. He was working off his fastball. It's just kind of unfortunate that it took this long if he's only signing for $1.5 million. I think there are some comparable pitchers who signed for around that amount earlier in the month, and they got a couple starts on their belt already. So he seems like a guy who would have been able to use the time and probably up and loan, but now it's really going to be a matter of where he starts next year, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny because he is a guy who we heard we're in negotiations with. It's not like a situation that we'll talk about with Blake Swihart, where the club waited until the 11th hour to even call him and make him an offer. The team was negotiating with him, and apparently they were really close for a long time. It was just a matter of haggling over a couple $100,000, which I would love to be in a position to haggle over a couple $100,000, but you know, they were close. And it didn't happen.
I actually read on Barnes that he was waiting. Him and his representatives were waiting for some of the other college pitchers to sign to make sure that they weren't, they were getting a deal on the same level.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And that happened with a lot of the college pitchers. It seems like they, other than Trevor Bauer, all waited until the last minute. Meanwhile, you've got Bauer. It's not like he signed right away, but Trevor Bauer with the Diamondbacks, he might be up this year. Saying he just went to Double A and his first start he was electric. They're saying he might be up by the end of the year. So it just shows how coming in and getting. You know, not saying that Barnes is going to be up by the end of the year. You know, Bauer was the best player in collegiate baseball this year, but it just shows with Barnes. I mean, did he cost himself maybe a year of being in the majors by waiting to sign? It's interesting.
Yeah, and I believe Sonny Gray also signed too.
Oh, Sonny Gray too. That's correct. I forgot about him. Sonny Gray out of Vanderbilt signed with who'd he sign with, Mioli?
That's why I just didn't say.
Well, if you look at Baseball America, has a great draft database for those out there, especially if you have a subscription. But yeah, Barnes is a guy. I think we all kind of agreed in the podcast after the draft. He's a guy that can move quickly. If he doesn't pitch this year, do we see him starting in Salem, or do we see him taking more of the Renato route?
I think if there's anybody that's going to start in Salem, it'd be Ramirez, who we're going to talk about later. But it seems like that's something that's reserved for guys who either got a taste the year before or just are that far advanced where being in Greenville might not do as much for him.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I would say Barnes would probably likely be on the Renato path, same type situation.
Yeah, I could see him starting in Greenville, staying there for a month or two, and then moving up to Salem. I think Portland by the end of the year, next year, is probably stretching a little bit. But at any rate, I could see him starting maybe 2013 in Portland and then having a shot at maybe a 2013 September call-up. That's if all goes well.
Yeah, that's best case scenario.
All right. Well, moving on, the other first-round pick, number 26 overall, was the received the biggest bonus of any Red Sox draftee, and I don't think that was really any surprise, was Blake Swihart, catcher out of Cleveland High School in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Switch-hitting catcher who he's a good bet to stay behind the plate, but even if he doesn't, the team believes he's got the kind of bat that'll play at, say, third base if he winds up having to move off of catcher. But they believe that he can stick back there. He received $2.5 million, and he wasn't a multi-sport athlete. So this isn't a Casey Kelly situation where he was – Casey Kelly, you may remember, was also committed to play quarterback at Tennessee. It was quarterback, correct? I'm remembering that right. Guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, that $3 million bonus that Casey Kelly received could be spread out over multiple years, over 5 years, rather than paid up front. Swihart is just a straight $2.5 million, which, you know, it's, again, quite a lot, a significant amount over what Slot was for the number 26 pick. I would argue he's got the potential to be the highest impact pick of this draft class. Matt, you wrote him up. What were your thoughts on that signing?
Yeah, I mean, it scraped the system right now. I think a lot of people were kind of looking for them to draft a catcher the last few years, and this seems to be their real, you know, blue chip guy right now. Like you said, he played all over the infield and even some outfield, I believe, in high school. So he's pretty raw at this point at catcher, but it seems like most of the experts believe that he has all the tools to stick there. He's got a pretty strong arm. He's slightly undersized, but most people think he'll fill out and have enough to stick there. And I've seen him mentioned as, you know, possible 320-plus homer. So for switch hitter and catcher, you know, that could be obviously huge for the Red Sox down the line.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And an interesting tidbit that you can get on Baseball America's draft database. He's focused on developing his game, and this spring he actually switched back and forth between hitting left and right-handed regardless of who he was facing, whether it was a left-hander or a right-hander, because he wanted to work on both sides of his swing. So I find that to be a really interesting little note. All right, so Swihart, I mean, does he play this year? I mean, we mentioned when we were talking before the podcast that GCL has 11 games left. Lowell's got 20. Do you send him to Fort Myers to get in a couple games? I mean, it can't hurt, but you think it's just sending him down there for instructs and, hey, if he gets a couple of bats, that's great. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd probably send him to GCL for, you know, for the rest of the season, get him around the team, around the coaches, have a good base going into the Fall Instructional League this year.
That sounds about right. Maybe Greenville probably next year, you've got to think, to start the year.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
For first round pick.
Yeah, that's what you'd hope, but
you never know.
Even as a first round pick.
I mean, catching is just such a funny position too. You know, were he a third baseman, there'd be no doubt in my mind, but I don't know. You know,
I'm not sure it's a huge disaster if he spends a couple months down in Florida. comes up to Lowell and then starts 2013 in Salem. It's really apples and oranges, you know?
Yeah,
no, it's actually the same thing. So not apples and oranges.
I mean, they've started guys in Greenville, though. I mean, Sean Coyle started there this year. I believe they started Rizzo there the year after he signed Lars Anderson. So there's precedent for high school picks starting in Greenville for the first full pro season. At the same time, with other players, they've taken a more conservative approach. You look at Will Middlebrooks, David Renfro, Garen Caccini. But those players, I think, either needed more development time, or in Caccini's place, he was recovering from a knee injury.
Yeah.
So I think he's a good bet to start Greenville. All right. First pitcher, or the highest pitcher the Red Sox selected, was Henry Owens. Left-hander out of Edison High School in Huntington Beach, California. He actually got a bigger bonus than Barnes. He got a $1,550,000 bonus. He is a big, lanky dude. He's 6'7", 200 pounds. Advanced feel for pitching. His velocity is kind of was low the last 2 years, and this spring he's been up in the low 90s. What do we think about the Owens signing? I actually think he's got the opportunity to really shoot up draft boards. I think he's a guy that a lot of people might have slept on because of the fact that the Red Sox took two guys ahead of him. I don't know if you guys feel that way as well.
Yeah, he's definitely not going to be the first guy when we look back immediately looking at this draft, but he's being a big left-hander. I mean, he's a guy you can really dream on. Mm-hmm. He's also, they did give him more than they gave Barnes. I know bonus figures are really not comparable to one another, especially from year to year, but it's a good place to get a guy like him, you know, take the high school arm. We made a big deal when it happens. You got the high school arm, you got the high school position player, you got the college position player, and you got the college pitcher. And if all four of those hit, especially with a guy like Owens, who as a left-hander could have a big impact, that's really going to make this, that's what's going to make or break this draft class.
Hegel, what do you think? Is this a guy we're going to have to wait to see a little bit?
Yeah, I think he may take, you know, a year or so to really begin to shoot up the prospect board. But, you know, right now he has a ton of pitches, it sounds like. He throws two versions of a curveball, a slider, and a changeup, two-seamer, four-seamer. So, you know, he might want to sort of refine that repertoire a little bit. Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, as he'll do that as he moves up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think once they get his arsenal straightened out, I could see him starting in Lowell next year, to be honest. I don't see him going to Greenville right away, given the fact that, you know, this isn't necessarily a high school pitcher who is going to fly through the system either. I think he's a guy they're going to have to wait on a little bit. And it would seem to me like he's ticketed for Lowell, personally.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I haven't taken a deep look at the kind of the roster situation in Greenville, but I know there's a lot of guys where you'd have to beat out where you wouldn't expect them to get up to Greenville. So
yeah,
I don't think there's any reason to rush.
And there's no need to rush. I'm like, yeah, exactly, like you said. Yeah, all right.
Kind of reminds me of Madison Young being there a couple years ago.
I was just thinking of that. I was actually just thinking of that. Young and Arthur, I think, what did he get, 90? I mean, sorry, 900?
900,000, yes.
So, you know, he's a little bit ahead of Young and Arthur, but I could easily see him being held back and going to Lowell. All right. And the final first rounder, then the supplemental round, the 40th pick, so just four picks after Owens, was Jackie Bradley. Bradley, I don't know if you guys have been following him on Twitter. He's certainly a very personable player, it seems, and
he's got personality.
He does, which is good. I love it. But you know, again, another player drafted high out of a strong collegiate program, South Carolina, of course, the back-to-back NCAA champions. Bradley was the MVP of the College World Series last year. Wound up signing at the deadline for $1,100,000. So bringing the Red Sox to $4 million players, which I don't believe they've ever had, four players who got $1 million signing bonuses. Bradley, to me, I think he's a no-brainer to start in Greenville next year, except for the fact that do they want to throw him right into that right away? With a rabid fan base, you know, does that put too much expectation on him or not? What do you guys think?
I'm not sure that should play a huge role in the decision. I mean, eventually, whether it's, you know, guys getting their first taste of pro ball in Lowell with the relatively big crowds there, when they get up to Portland or Pawtucket with the crowds, they're going to see the crowds eventually. I would think that the reason to have him not start there would be because he's ready for Salem. He's a guy who, other than getting ready, used to the routine, has the abilities to play in high A and get kind of get that jump on the competition. You know what I mean?
You think? I'm trying to think. What players have they? I mean, I think Vidic would be the only recent comparable of a college player who started his first full season in Lowell. Salem.
And even he signed probably a week after the draft, so he had a lot of time in Lowell. But
he had a lot of time. I mean, that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, that would be the big difference. But
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that it seems like Greenville is the most likely. I don't think the fact that he played in college there play a huge factor, unless they know something, you know, the Red Sox know something that they want to keep him away from there for some reason. But, you know, I think he's a really interesting prospect. The fact that he was injured this year kind of made him fall on the draft board. And it's interesting to me that he's pegged as above average defensive player in center field, yet sounds like he has more or less average speed. So they say he has excellent instincts defensively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other than that, just kind of a 5-tool player with above average power ceiling. So he could be that 5-tool guy that they've been looking for.
Yeah, I agree. I think I read a quote, I forget from what source, whether it was Baseball America or what, but I think the quote was something to the effect of that he could close his eyes and take a perfect route to a fly ball, get right underneath where it's going to land, and, you know, just, again, the instincts, like you mentioned. I think it's depends on how he recovers from this injury and how he looks and instructs in spring training, what the club sees out of him, whether they think that he's ready for Salem versus Greenville. I don't see him getting held back to, say, go to Lowell. Matter of fact, I think it's entirely possible that he goes to Lowell now to get a few at-bats, or at least kind of check things out, much in the way that Renato Workman and Chris Hernandez did at the end of last season. So it really wouldn't surprise me at all to see him get some at-bats in Lowell. Right now, that Lowell team doesn't really have too much blocking him, to be frank. if any of those four guys go to Lowell this season, I think they immediately become the top. They're better prospects than anyone who's there right now, with Caccini hurt. I can't think of anyone on that roster, really. Unless I'm missing someone.
Which isn't to knock anybody there, I mean.
I'm sorry?
Which isn't to knock anybody there.
No. Garcia, I mean, it's
pitching well, yeah.
Yeah, oh, there are guys playing great, but it's just there's no one there that's going to block these guys from getting playing time by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, absolutely not.
All right, so those are the four big names that signed yesterday. A couple other guys who signed we'll just hit on briefly because we're trying to make this a quick one. The Red Sox fourth round pick, Noe Ramirez out of Cal State Fullerton, signed for $625,000. That was, I believe, about double slot at that position, if I remember correctly. Mioli, I know you wrote up Ramirez. He's a kid with a great story, and you think he can move quick, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He seems like if you had to peg one of these guys to start in terms of the rotation in Salem, he's the guy. You don't want to say the Chris Hernandez track because then, you know, people will make that comparison. They're very different pitchers, but we've seen instances of guys who have been able to ride the one great off-speed pitch very high through the system. You know, Stolme basically had that carry him through Salem. Mm-hmm. Drake Britton had that his curveball carry him through Greenville, and then
they both kind of throw a strike.
Yeah, and then they both sputtered this year. So it might not make sense to have someone like Ramirez with the great curve or changeup that everyone talks about to have him just toying with batters in Greenville. It's better to challenge him and make him learn how to work off his fastball ball against the better hitters in the Carolina League.
Yeah, and I mean, do we see? I've read one scouting report that his ceiling is probably as a good future number three. I think that's fair, but You know, he pitches in the 88 to 91 range right now. As you mentioned, he's got a great changeup that he learned from Ricky Romero of the Toronto Blue Jays, actually. Has splitter action, great deception. And it's rated a plus to plus plus pitch per Baseball America already. Slider's kind of a show-me slider at this point, but I agree. The Arsenal's the type that could send him to Salem. I don't know. Matt, does that sound like a... I mean, I could see him being a future reliever. Do you think... You know, what do you think of when you hear his scouting report?
Yeah, it's... I don't know if I see him as a reliever so much as, you know, if he flames out, maybe like a quadruple A type guy. Just I don't know if it doesn't sound like a fastball that would play up out of the pen, but you know, I could potentially see that working as well. It sounds like a guy who could move pretty quick.
Yeah, and just a quick note on his story. Just to mention to people, he basically grew up in the middle of a very bad area in California. I don't want to use the term ghetto, but just a lot of, you know, violence in that area. And there's a great piece online if you can find it. I know we linked to it in our forum, but
it was on ESPN Los Angeles, I believe.
ESPN Los Angeles, right? Just talking about where he grew up and how he kind of had to rise above what was around him to get where he is, and how that neighborhood really views him as a hero for getting drafted by the Red Sox. You know, that kind of puts things into perspective. This is just getting drafted, not making the majors, not even pitching in a minor league game yet. He's kind of hailed as a hero back home. So, you know, he's a guy, if he can get to the bigs, that'd be a great, great story.
And just
certainly
one
got to root for. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, one last note. I wrote it up in the news post, but 90.2 innings, 10 extra base hits.
Yeah.
It's way down from the year before, so it could just be a fluke, but if people are getting good contact against you, they're going to have more than 10 extra base hits. So,
oh, for sure.
There's definitely something advanced about what he was doing this year.
Yeah, a friend of mine that used to coach out in California loved Ramirez when we picked him. He loved that pick, and he loved the Cody Kukoc pick, which we're going to get to in a sec. Oh, and Blake Swihart. He was drooling over Blake Swihart. But, yeah, he said Ramirez has some really great stuff, that change up, and he commands his fastball very, very well. He's a guy that can move up quickly. Not necessarily – don't get me wrong about the comment I made. I don't project him as a reliever, but – with two great pitches, he could certainly move quickly if the Red Sox decided to go that route. Fifth-round pick, which is a little bit of a surprise, Mookie Betts, a high schooler out of Tennessee. He was a shortstop, but he's probably going to move to second base. He was a guy that we kind of, I believe, had pegged as not signing, and a lot of people did. He wound up getting $700,000, and I think at this point it would be fair to also talk about the eighth-round pick, the guy who didn't sign, Senquez Gallson, who I mentioned, the high schooler out of Mississippi. The story is that when Gallson didn't sign, apparently the Red Sox offered him. Did you guys read this as well? Seven figures?
Yes. Seven figures.
To sign. And of course, that would have been spread out over 5 years as a multi-sport athlete. But when Gallson decided not to sign, and that was just a matter of him deciding that he wanted to play college football at Ole Miss, not necessarily a money thing, based on what we're reading. A lot of that money got allocated elsewhere, and in fact, that might have been the tipping point in having Mookie Betts sign. He's kind of interesting, just seems more like an athlete, a raw athlete, much in the vein of what Gallson would have been. Is that what you guys are hearing? And what do you think, when you sign these athletes to just try and mold them, it seems like it could be kind of a hit-or-miss proposition.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, given the last couple of years, some of the guys who have signed as middle infielders that are more athletes than baseball players, he's going to have to prove it at every single level. And that's, I mean, that's not to say he can or can't do it, but it's going to be a situation where he's going to have to learn on the fly and kind of show the results as he's going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of almost like a Ryan Dent type.
Yep.
You know, it's pretty strong defensively. I've heard that he might ultimately move to second base. A little on the smaller side, but, you know, plus speed. And sounds like he has decent average power for his size. And just, yeah, like you said, he's a really good athlete. Apparently, like, a unbelievable bowler, too.
Yeah, he was the state bowler of the year as a junior, apparently. And he was also all-state in basketball. So, you know, he's not necessarily a raw athlete. He's got good hitting fundamentals. You know, they like his makeup and intangibles, but at the same time, you know, like a lot of these high school kids that get drafted, a lot of work to be done. We mentioned earlier Cody Kukoc. He's from Lawrence, Kansas, and also had a he had a commitment to the University of Kansas. Another tall left-hander. He's 6'4", 190 pounds. He signed for 800 grand, which is a lot less than what we were hearing. We were hearing that he was asking for a million. So that's kind of a, to me at least, that stands out as kind of a bargain. Matt, what were your thoughts on that signing?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot. He was a really good hitter in high school as well. You know, received he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Kansas for 2010. He's just a really athletic guy. His delivery, loose delivery, and athleticism has drawn comparisons to Lester in the past, John Lester.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we've heard word that his fastball has touched as high as 95. So he's definitely a guy with a lot of potential. He's got a hard slider, developing changeup. Both of those are, you know, not great pitches right now, but they both have potential. And also, you know, he just needs repetition, needs to work on his fastball command. Just, you know, the normal things for a raw high school pitcher. But he's just a little more raw than some other high school pitchers, I would say.
Yeah, and the thing I actually keep reading about him is that he needs to work on his mechanics, getting them more consistent, because his release point tends to vary. So that's something I could see him. I wonder. I could even see him starting in the GCL next year. He just seems like that kind of raw player that they might keep down in Fort Myers. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that. Probably a toss up between GCL and Lowell, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think, when the Red Sox have signed this many high bonus first high schoolers this early, I mean, have they? I mean, sometimes they tend to go to Lowell, as you've seen with like Madison Youngener. But I can't remember them signing this many, say, arms, like high school arms.
Yeah, so am I just? I don't think they've drafted a lefty high schooler. You know, in even Theo's time there, I can't remember another.
No, they literally haven't. I remember when they drafted Owens. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, good point. The last one that got anywhere near that much money was Jonathan Singer's favorite player, Mike Rozier. So,
El Busto.
Yes, yeah, says he's been affectionately named
El Busto. all right. Well, those were the big signings in the first 10 rounds from yesterday. We'll mention other players that signed since we last had our podcast. Jordan Weems, catcher out of high school in Georgia, he signed for $500,000, and he's been playing in the GCL. Miguel Pena was the sixth rounder. He signed for only $85,000. He was in Lowell and actually got hurt. He was put on the long-term DL recently, so hopefully that's nothing too bad. Galson didn't sign. Travis Shaw was the ninth rounder. Third baseman out of Kent State. He has been in Lowell tearing it up. Arguably their best hitter, especially with Caccini down. Although I think he's been hurt recently as well, correct?
Yeah, Shaw's been slowed lately. I'm not sure of the injury, but
yeah,
he definitely hasn't kept up the pace he was at towards the beginning of the season.
Yep. Yeah. 10th rounder, Cody Kobach. He's from D3, I believe, Wisconsin Stevens Point. It's either D2 or D3. He only got $85,000. Very, very fast player. He's in the GCL right now. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Just all kinds of speed, sub 4 times to first base, I believe, if that makes sense. Tell me if that doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it does.
But I've heard reports of him beating out routine ground balls to second base. So speed demon. and that's yeah, super athlete. And this is the time, especially in the 2 years of the Emil drafts, the Emil Sade drafts, really seems to be super focused on toolsy guys. Are you guys getting the same kind of feel that I am?
Maybe yeah, Matt, a little bit.
John, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. This year seems like the ceilings are a lot higher. Mm-hmm. Even last year, I guess, with guys like Jacobs, you know, he had a high ceiling. But last year was were more Bradley-type guys where it's just good value everywhere on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Brents where they did, getting Renato where they did, even Vidic.
Yeah, Yeah, the value just happened to be in the college guys early last year, but this year it's the high school guys. We should also mention the other guy that signed yesterday was Matt Spaulding, a righty out of Louisville, Kentucky, high school player. He got $275,000 to sign. He was the 29th round pick. He sits low 90s, another guy. He can hold his velocity deep into games, but according to Baseball America's scouting projection of him, his delivery has some kinks that need to get worked out. Not a lot of projection. He might be a reliever in the future. Good athlete. If he went to Western Kentucky, where he was committed, he was going to be a two-way player. But reading his scouting report, I see a lot of Madison Younginer, perhaps, in the sense of some kinks in the delivery, even though it's a plus arm. We'll see what he does. I mean, he'll probably he seems ticketed for GCL, to be honest with you.
Yeah, spent some quality time down in the fort.
Yeah, so the Red Sox in total broke their record. I believe $10.7 million was the final number in bonuses that they handed out to players this year. I don't know. What do you guys think overall of this draft haul? We'll go with Hegel first.
Yeah, I would say it was pretty impressive the way they were able to balance the high school high ceiling talents with the college level guys. I mean, they obviously try to do that every year, but you know, even in that first round in the supplemental round, just those four guys, you know, one high school pitcher, one high school batter, one college arm, and one college batter. Just that's sort of, you know, like a microcosm of the entire draft, and I think you know that is the way to go, because obviously the Red Sox have to reach on these the high school guys because you know they're looking for the next big star. You know, they're not like a lower tier club that wants, you know, needs some filler and that sort of thing. They really are looking for that next star. So to mix those high school guys in there, I think really is great for the draft this year.
How about you, Johnny?
Well, I mean, it's obviously great that they got everybody signed and didn't go too crazy signing anybody. They didn't give anybody way more than anybody thought they deserved, and or really do anything they don't normally do. This is seems like your standard draft where they got great value with guys like Ramirez. They got good value with Bradley where they got him, and it's just kind of unfortunate that the real conversation with these guys isn't going to start until the beginning of next year, because there's some other guys in their position that have gotten a couple months under their belt, and we've seen what having time playing could do for a guy like Brent. Brent struggled last year, just came around. He was a different player this year. And I mean, that
leads me into a question I was going to ask then. What do you see happening? We've heard the baseball CBA is up at the end of this year, although there's no real talk about a possible work stoppage for those of you who are scarred by the NFL and the NBA. But, you know, we're hearing about changes in the draft, and that it just doesn't seem like anyone is happy with the system, the teams, the players. I mean, John, you mentioned that you heard Swihart got his offer at 11:59 or 11:58.
Yeah.
Like we heard happen last year with Anthony Renato, and like we just heard happened last year with Chris Hernandez. You know, so the players aren't happy. The teams hate it because they want to get these players into camp. What do you do? We've heard hard slotting. We've heard no slotting. We've heard you know, move the deadline. What do you think can be done?
It doesn't seem like a situation where there's an easy solution, because if there was, there would be recommendations for how much to sign a guy in a certain position. Just it clearly means nothing. And if that's the reason that these guys are waiting and kind of starting off the relationship with the teams on a bad foot, then if their recommendation is just get rid of them. I mean, if you want to do hard slotting, do hard slotting. But I guess I don't question the sense of development, but I bet there's situations where teams can save a little money just by making a call to a guy like Swihart. We heard Swihart's number was closer to 3. If they call it 11:58 and say 2.5, that's a big decision for a kid to make. Basically, his whole life, his whole life's work, he has to decide what he wants to do in 30 seconds.
Sure.
So he might be sacrificing money that he wouldn't normally have to sacrifice just to start his pro career. And I mean, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's $500,000, and these are teenagers that they're giving these decisions to make in a very, very short amount of time.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Renato, they gave him his number, so that kind of seemed different in my mind. You know, they knew what the number was. Is they said they'd give him the number, and he took it. But he also pitched over the summer.
Yeah, it's just the development time, though. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
All right, Commissioner Hegel. Commissioner yeah. Hegel, what would you do?
I mean, I'm pretty much in the same boat. It doesn't make a lot of sense to keep these kids from signing. I think the easiest solution is just to move the deadline up, say a month to July 15th. I think there's better solutions, but I just don't think that many are plausible just because, you know, changing that much would require a lot of, a lot of finesse. So, so I would just suggest moving the deadline up.
Yep, I hear you.
That would affect summer leagues a lot more than it does now, but maybe if there's a guy like Renato who's actually pitching in the Cape to see if he's ready and to see if he's going to sign, then maybe there can be exceptions for that. But someone like Barnes, who's not playing baseball for going on 3 months, it's just there's no real reason for it.
Well, and it, just to give people a little bit of a history lesson, the signing deadline used to be the next year's draft. So what would happen is you would have guys called draft and follows that you would let go to junior college or something and play. But there would only be a handful of holdouts until the signing deadline. I mean, you're talking 4 or 5 guys, that would come down to the deadline. Now you're seeing, at least in my opinion, I could be wrong, a lot more guys go to the signing deadline because, hey, what's one summer? It's different than, missing all of that year and half of the following year to get your number. So that's why they moved the deadline up, because of a handful of cases that they wanted to eliminate and instead created more cases of holding out. So I think you see the signing deadline moved, and it wouldn't surprise me if the slot system somehow gets tweaked. I don't know in which direction, but I think that the baseball press and the clubs there's enough widespread dissatisfaction with the system that there could be relatively significant difference in how they do things next year. We'll have to wait and see what they decide to do. But again, all we can really do is wait. I believe that actually one quick note, for instance, most of the people listening are local. One first round selection did not sign in Major League Baseball. And John, were you the one that talked to him, or was that John Gray?
That was Gray.
All right. Well, it's Tyler Beattie out of, he was the one out of Lawrence Academy, correct?
Yes.
He chose not to sign with Toronto Blue Jays?
Correct.
I believe. Yep. Didn't sign with the Blue Jays and is going to Vanderbilt. He was a guy that a couple of us had projected to perhaps get picked by the Red Sox. I thought it was a near certainty personally, and I think if he fell into the supplemental round, he would have been selected by the Red Sox. However, he chose not to sign with Toronto and will be headed to Vandy. Otherwise, every other first rounder was signed, and only one supplemental round pick did not sign. I believe there was one second round pick that did not sign and 2 third round picks that did not sign. So it's crazy. Everybody just winds up signing. It's just at the last minute. So that's, I think, about it for us. Do you guys have anything else to throw in? Some last minute thoughts? Matt, how about you?
Well, we didn't mention Josh Bell, of course, signed with Pirates. That was, a big surprise. Most people were very shocked when Pittsburgh selected him and then assumed that they had almost no chance of signing him, and they did end up signing him for, I believe, was it $5
million? $5 million, and the word around baseball, there were 28 teams that passed on him. One team actually didn't have a pick before Pittsburgh took him, but you've got to think he goes a lot earlier if clubs know he's going to sign for $5 million. Am I right? I mean, he has to go top 10, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, I mean, you just never know with these things. There was a great Alex Speer article last night talking about Swihart when the Red Sox went out to see him for a workout. They kind of got an indication that he was going to be willing to sign because he played a doubleheader but the, and the field wasn't open for a workout afterwards. So we drove, I don't know what it was. It was a considerable distance to another field, pretty much all the way across New Mexico, and worked out for the Red Sox and drove all the way home after a six-hour doubleheader. So they figured if he's willing to do that for him, then he's definitely willing to at least consider signing, and that's ultimately what happened, why they took him. But if guys are going to say they're not going to sign, I guess you have to take them at their word. I mean, I think Beedy said he wasn't going to sign too, and he actually followed through on it.
Yeah, and there were a couple other guys who people were surprised signed. I know Goodwin, who signed with Goodwin was
the Nationals.
Yeah, the Nationals wound up being one of the big winners. Nationals and Pirates seem to be the consensus winners last
night. And that's. I mean, if there's one good thing to take out of the draft, other than the Red Sox doing what they do normally and making all of us happy, it's absolutely great to see these teams actually start to take advantage of it just in time for baseball to go and change the whole system again on them.
How about you, John? You have any last thoughts?
Not really. Do we plug Futures of Fenway this weekend?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'll just throw in one thing real quick of note. Alex Meyer, who apparently turned down $2 million based on what we heard from the Red Sox to sign out of high school, drafted by also the Nationals and accepted $2 million. Which is what he would have signed for anyway out of high school. So hopefully he enjoyed his 2 years at the University of Kentucky. Which, I mean, you can't blame him. Hey, you get the two years of college, and I can only imagine, you know, I look back on my undergraduate days fondly. I can only imagine what it was like being a stud pitcher at Kentucky.
Yeah, stud pitcher at a basketball school.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's true. I don't know. Maybe he never went on a Judd or something. I don't know. Or no, who am I thinking of? Not Winona Judd.
Ashley Judd, right?
Ashley Judd, yeah, the actress.
Big, big Wildcat fan.
Yeah, huge Wildcat fan. Very good looking.
that too.
but yeah, so Futures of Fenway is this. I'm not even in New England right now. I'm in Virginia, so I can't even go. But I believe it's this Saturday, correct? And there are still tickets available. So those of you listening, if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you enjoy following Red Sox prospects. Cannot emphasize enough what a great event this is. Doubleheader. First, you'll see the Portland Sea Dogs, led by everyone's favorite pitcher, Charlie Hyger, throwing the knuckleball, because if anything doesn't happen at Fenway enough, it's a pitcher throwing knuckleballs for the home team.
Can't get enough.
Can't get enough. and then I believe since he's lined up, it would be Alex Wilson, the recently promoted Alex Wilson, pitching for Pawtucket. Can we assume that?
I saw he was going to start on Thursday. So
yeah, Thursday is what I heard.
All right. Well, he got moved out of his start. So if you wanted to see the best Portland pitcher that they had, or the best prospect at least in our rankings in Portland, tough luck. But, you know, there's autograph sessions with each team while they're not playing, while the other game is going on. It's a great event. The mascots come out, so it's always good to see Slugger and Paws and Socks. I know that's why I go to see the mascot hijinks. But yeah, great games in the field. I can still remember seeing Will Middlebrooks in that middle of that miserable season he had in Lowell to debut, kind of setting himself right a little bit, and getting on a little bit of a hot streak and driving in the game-winning run for the spinners in the opener. I believe that would be 4 years ago at this point. So some great games, and it's great to see these kids come out and play at Fenway. Great opportunity to them. It's really cheap. I try to make it every year that I'm at least in New England, and we suggest you do too. So just go to the RedSox.com ticket page, and you can get tickets for Futures at Fenway this Saturday. And I think that should do it for us. We'll cue up El Chombo. There he is, and he'll send us on out. Thanks for listening. For Heagle. Yeah, I want to call you Heigl. I don't know why. Heigl. Matt Heigl, John Mioli, and my phone receiving updates from the Red Sox game. Thanks for listening, and thanks for reading the site.